Good morning. It's wonderful to be here with you. I loved that meditation. I like Mary Oliver. But lilies, as an answer, a lavish answer to prayers uttered or not, that's a good story. That's a really good story. So bookmark that one, or at least I will. Stories. I want to talk about stories and their relationship to truth, but also stories as something, making stories is just a thing we do, we human beings. Our fourth principle, we just read the seven principles of Unitarian Universalism. The fourth one, which if you've never noticed, is the center. You can make something out of that if you want. Some people make all kinds of interesting meanings out of how those seven principles are arranged. It's kind of fun. You can find a whole lot. If you do an internet search, you can find lots of different ways people have arranged those and said, oh, this means this, and you know these two relate to all kinds of charts. It's fun. We're not going to do those stories this morning. But the fourth one, it's in the center, and I kind of like that. It is we covenant to affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And that seeking for truth is something that again, seems to be a very human thing to do. And it is something that sometimes we get ourselves in trouble over, just like we get ourselves in trouble with the stories we tell. So stories, they are one of the ways our brains seem to be wired to help us navigate the world, to make meaning. They're a way we have of knowing things, maybe the truth, maybe something approaching the truth, but it does seem to just be kind of something we automatically do as human beings. And sometimes we're conscious of it, and sometimes we're not. Sometimes we're telling ourselves stories, but we think we're just reviewing evidence. We treat it as evidence when it's sometimes a story. And this is where we get ourselves into trouble, I think. But I want to make sure you know that I'm talking about story here as something that's inevitable for human beings to do, telling stories, making stories, telling each other stories. It's necessary. We are social animals. We tell each other stories. We tell our children stories. It helps to make us human beings. And those stories can be misleading just as easily as they can be sources of truth and hope and love. But they're definitely they're a central part of our cultural conditioning, I think, often. They're a double-edged sword, but they're very powerful. Some are more helpful than other stories. For instance, Joe lit a candle for his friend Albert. That story of somebody seeming to be failing, recovering, and re-engaging with more vigorous activities in life, this is a hopeful story. This is a good story. It's good to know that although we hear lots of stories of people who just long progression down, there are other stories. And that also, all of us, we live with both of those in our own lives. We sometimes are in decline, and sometimes we rally and come back, and in small ways, always. So it's good to hear each other's good stories, as much as it is good to hold each other in our more troublesome stories, our more worrying stories. The key, I think, is to be aware of those stories that we have. I think that not all Unitarian Universalists would agree with me, but I think one of the keys of the search for truth and meaning is to be aware of the stories we tell each other, to be aware of how they are helpful and how they are not helpful, and to look for and nurture those stories that help us to live the kinds of lives and build the kind of world we want to have. You may have encountered it. I may have asked you to look at it another time when I was here. But there's a reading in our hymnal. It's at 657 if you want to take a look at it. But it's from Sophia Lyon Foss, who was probably the major religious educator in the Unitarian movement of the mid-20th century. People who work in religious education, especially for children, in our movement today still are required to read her work and engage with it. But there's a reading that's titled, It Matters What We Believe. And she's talking about beliefs here, but think also stories, because in some ways our beliefs are stories or parts of stories. But she says this, some beliefs are like walled gardens. They encourage exclusiveness and the feeling of being especially privileged. Other beliefs are expansive and lead the way into wider and deeper sympathies. Some beliefs are like shadows, clouding children's days with fears of unknown calamities. Other beliefs are like sunshine, blessing children with the warmth of happiness. Some beliefs are divisive, separating the saved from the unsaved, friends from enemies. Other beliefs are bonds in a world community where sincere differences beautify the pattern. Some beliefs are like blinders, shutting off the power to choose one's own direction. Other beliefs are like gateways, opening wide vistas for exploration. Some beliefs weaken a person's selfhood. They blight the growth of resourcefulness. Other beliefs nurture self-confidence and enrich the feeling of personal worth. Some beliefs are rigid, like the body of death, impotent in a changing world. Other beliefs are pliable, like the young sapling, ever growing with the upward thrust of life. So I like this picture because I think very clearly she says, so these things, you know, there's some ways of thinking about things that lead us to be closed and exclusive and afraid and divided from each other and to not trust ourselves and to be rigid. And other beliefs encourage us to open up, to bond with others, to be happy, to explore things with confidence, to be pliable, to grow. I love the story about the seeds. Because I think important for us right now is to be looking for stories that connect us to the earth. We've had way too many years of stories that told us we were separate from and could be separate from and should be separate from. It's not working out real well for us. So what are the sorts of stories we tell to ourselves and to each other? I started a list. It's not all that important that you know my list. I'll tell you some of the things. You will have your own lists if you think about it for just a little bit. But things that came to mind, things we tell ourselves, things we tell others, things we tell each other. I am not good enough. I'm alone. I'm separate. Human beings are separate from other creatures, from the earth, from the web of life. Truth exists in some sort of linear form. History is linear, and that's all it is. You know, one thing after the other, it just, you know, can be orderly. You can put it all in an outline, and it makes sense that way. Nothing doesn't fit. These are stories. There's not enough for everyone. We aren't safe. We aren't safe because of them, you know, the bad hombres. Safety is best sought through force, or best ensured, or best protected through force. Technology can solve everything, or anything. Technology is a good problem solver, and it is sometimes. Success is the thing. It's the goal. It is whatever the big it is. Success looks like fill in the blank. Our thoughts are more trustworthy than our feelings. It's important to know the right way to do something, to be, to think, to tell stories, even. People get what they deserve. This one's really pernicious, I think. Truth is truth. It's clear cut and it's obvious. Control. We should have it. We can control things. Or if we can't, we ought to be able to. we ought to seek control. So that's just my own quick list. There are more stories. I recently heard a sermon Gail Seavey delivered in Nashville about truth. And she suggested in her sermon that the big difference between what I'm calling stories, good stories, healthy stories, and not so helpful stories, is that some stories divide us. They divide people from other people. They separate, they build walls, they segregate. So for instance, her sermon illustration was actually about the Russians, who are really, really, really good and very clever at using social media to leverage stories to divide people, to manipulate elections. Other stories, other truths connect. They illuminate the truth, especially the truth that we are connected to each other. So truth, I think, is not ever really straightforward and clear. It's not a destination we get to. It's something we are. Our fourth principle doesn't say we, you know, affirm and promote truth. We affirm and promote the search for truth, the free and responsible search for truth. So how do we get to truth? My favorite new book is by Maria Popova. It's called Figuring, and I don't know what it is. I don't know whether to call it history or literary criticism or just things this brilliant person thinks and writes really beautifully about. But it's the introduction to the book is just amazing, just astonishing. And there's a story. She has mentioned how everything in the world, and she has all these beautiful descriptions. Someday maybe I'll use that paragraph, that page in a sermon. But she ends with that everything came out of the Big Bang. All the atoms are connected. Weird. And she quotes Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. talking about the inescapable network of mutuality, and Walt Whitman, every atom belonging to me as good belongs to you. And then she gives us this story from her own life. One autumn morning, as I read a dead poet's letters in my friend Wendy's backyard in San Francisco, I glimpse a fragment of that atomic mutuality. Mid-sentence, my peripheral vision, that glory of instinct honed by millennia of evolution, pulls me toward a miraculous sight, a small, shimmering red leaf twirling in midair. It seems for a moment to be dancing its final descent, but no, it remains suspended there, 6 feet above the ground, orbiting an invisible center by an invisible force. For an instant, I can see how such imperceptible causalities could drive the human mind to superstition, could impel medieval villagers to seek explanation in magic and witchcraft. But then I step closer and notice a fine spider's web glistening in the air above the leaf, conspiring with gravity in this spinning miracle. Neither the spider has planned for the leaf nor the leaf for the spider, and yet there they are, an accidental pendulum propelled by the same forces that cradle the moons of Jupiter in orbit, animated into this ephemeral early morning splendor by eternal cosmic laws, impervious to beauty and indifferent to meaning, yet replete with both to the bewildered human consciousness beholding it. I'm a little geeky, but I love that paragraph. There's this leaf, and you can see in looking at it that magic makes sense. And then if you look a little more, but it takes effort. You gotta get up and walk over there and look at it from different angles till the light finds the spider web. And look, it's hanging, and it makes sense. And yet it was a beautiful, magical thing. And it still is. Understanding it hasn't changed that. So the truth, the spider and the leaf didn't know this was going to happen. They didn't plan it. They didn't create it. And yet it happens. And these things happen in our world. Beauty and connections. Connections that don't have to be controlled to be real and to create beauty happen. This is a good story about our world. Popova spends the book telling lots and lots of stories. And one of her big points is that truth takes a long time. Lots of things are interconnected the way that leaf and that spider web are. And we sort of bumble through the world, and it takes a big span of studying people's lives, not in isolation, but in connection with each other. She studies a lot of people who might be familiar to you if you've studied American history, not the political actors, but the artists and the writers and the scientists. But she reads not just their work, but also their diaries. And she traces their relationships with each other and with other artists and writers and scientists. And she says truth, what makes a human life, I think, is where she's... I haven't read, because I like it so much, I only read one chapter at a time. It's going to take me a couple of years. But what makes a life good? We can really only see that from a very long distance. Big perspective with lots of lives. She talks about facts crosshatch with other facts to shade in nuances of a larger truth, she says. And this is a story that welcomes more. It's not trying to pare down the truth, the statement, the center, but it's saying, oh, but this, and what about this? How does this fit? And how can we build a picture? It strikes me as being a much more life-giving way of thinking about stories and thinking about truth, because there's room for magic and beauty, for chance, for connection. There's room to create meaning and then to recreate it, to reinterpret. She says we mistake chance for choice, our labels and models of things for the things themselves, our records for our history. I like the way she thinks big picture and long term, because it leaves us room to discover that our models and our labels are not the things themselves. We have time to sit and watch and go, oh, what's that? And to weave that back into the story. It's something we are never, ever done with, which brings us back to the fourth principle. It is the search for truth that we're after here. It's not the truth. It's the search that is our focus. So I actually found something really amazing. Just one sentence. It's in a Terry Pratchett novel that Karen lent me, actually. I finished reading it, I don't know, last week or something, and I wrote down a sentence that I found near the end of it. I realized it expresses something of a theme in Pratchett's books in general. And he has this, it's actually sort of the ghost of a divine oracle who's talking and, you know, has taken over. It's a crazy. Terry Pratchett's novels are always just marvelously, wonderfully creative. But what comes out in the middle of a longer speech is, I wish people would not be so careless about what they believe. I wish people would not be so careless about what they believe. Yes, I like that. I like that a lot. So, and I'm wrapping up here. I'm going to end before 11 o'clock. The point is, in our stories, in our search for truth, is not to get things right, not to reach the point of having found the truth. I don't know, do any of you remember in the late 70s, there was evangelical Christianity in one of its waves had these little, I think they were yellow buttons that said, I found it on them. I was at the time 14, I think. So, and it, you know, developmentally at that age, the idea of having found it actually, like, is kind of appealing, because at 14, nothing, you're like, what? And, you know, and adolescents often think with less nuance, often, not always. But this I found it actually kind of that made sense, and I wasn't sure I wanted to wear that button, but still it made sense to me that I saw a lot of people wearing that button here and there and everywhere. But that's not what we're after. The story I tell myself is that we don't ever find the truth, and that that's okay. That we are always people on the way. We are always in the search. But we can perhaps try to be a little less careless about what we believe. We Unitarian Universalists especially have sometimes been a little heavy on the freedom of the search, and we sometimes within our ranks, often people observing us and listening to us describe ourselves will say, well, you can just believe anything. And that was part of what, you know, almost 100 years ago, Sophia Lyons-Foss is saying, no, some beliefs are repressive and others are liberating. Some keep people out and others let people in. We can't believe anything, people. So we're on the search, and we need to be less careless, more careful about the stories, the thoughts, the truths that we let in. And I'm talking both individually. I know I have my own lots of examples, actually, about what things I tell myself. And eventually, if I'm lucky, I realize, oh, I'm telling myself this set of stories. Maybe I need something else. For example, this last week, I went in to talk to my supervisor at the big church in Nashville, and she is retiring about a year from now. And we are seriously considering, like, tearing down all our buildings and rebuilding. And we're thinking about governance change. And it's going to be really there's a lot going on, right? And everybody's a little anxious. And it's coming out here and there. You know, it's okay. I think we're in good shape. I really do. But I went to her office and I said, I need you to tell me some good stories about what happens a month after you leave on retirement. The month after you retire. What could that look like? Because I realize that so many people here are anxious, and I'm entertaining all these stories about what might happen that aren't good. That all the staff gets great job offers somewhere else and leaves. That people stop coming to church, and our pledge drive doesn't work next year, and we don't have any money, and the interim or developmental minister we hire hates me, and I end up not having a job or not having a job that's any fun. And you know, I'm telling myself all these horrible stories and getting really stressed out, and worse, I'm getting reactive to other things that are happening in my day-to-day life. Somebody sends me an email, and I said, but I don't like that word. I need some good stories. You know? So I am learning to watch the stories I tell myself and to go looking for better stories. And she did tell me some. She told me about other ministers in jobs like mine who've been through these transitions and really enjoyed them and had wonderful relationships with the new supervisors coming in. It's like, yes, thank you. That's good. So I hope that we can learn to be less careless about what we believe, about the stories we tell ourselves. So I want to leave you with this blessing. Take care, friends. Pay attention to the stories you tell yourselves, the stories you tell your children, the stories you tell each other. Listen for those backstories, for the stories we are telling each other about who we are, about what we need, what we value, what we cherish. Look for those stories that acknowledge connection and nurture it. Question the stories that divide. Know that we will come closest to the truth through careful, patient attention to the complex histories of our lives, to the long scale history of our lives together. So take care, friends. Be mindful of the stories we tell, and look for the stories that help us seek truths that encompass beauty and love and the wisdom that dwells in hope. Amen.